We have been offering little drops of water to the ocean of the Buddha Dharma. And today we can offer another drop or two. I meant to say, and I hope it's not too late, to suggest to you that everything that's offered here is questionable. I'm not saying everything is false or true, but I am saying it's questionable. And I also hear coming to mind now the teaching, which is that what we're contemplating here, what we're taking care of here, is far too important to be taken seriously. Yesterday, we brought up one of the cases from the Book of Serenity about one of the co-founders of the so-called Soto school in China, Shaoxiang, disciple of Dongshan. And the name of the case is Shaoxiang's reality body, literally also Shaoxiang's Dharma body, the Dharmakaya Vairochana, the central Buddha of this great scripture, and apparently also of our school, because it's the first homage we offer before we eat. Vairochana Buddha, pure Dharmakaya. And then we say, Lochana Buddha, Sambhogakaya. Is that right?
Sambhogakaya.
Complete Sambhogakaya. And as we said yesterday, the Sambhogakaya can understand the first Buddha body of Vairochana is like space. And then those who have confidence in this true body of Buddha can offer themselves to it. They can enter the Sambhogakaya Buddha, the Samadhi of the sutras, of the Mahayana sutras. They can enter the precious mirror Samadhi and the self-fulfilling Samadhi and the Samadhi of the womb body of the Tathagata, which is Vairochana, which all Buddhists possess in an unpossessive way. Am I speaking loudly enough? And then the Nirmanakaya, which is the transformation body, is the body that appears of various appearances of the true body, the Dharma body. The Dharma body can appear in innumerable ways, and we call those, and they can appear in history, like today and yesterday. That's the Nirmanakaya Buddha, Shakyamuni, for example. And in that story, which we looked at yesterday, Shaoxiang speaks to one of the elders of his community, Elder De. And he asks, or he states, first of all, he states, the Dharma body, actually it says the true Dharma body of the Buddha is like vast space. It manifests in response to beings. What is the principle, or do you understand the principle of response? And Elder De says, like a donkey looking into a well. And then the teacher, Shaoxiang, says, you have indeed said quite a lot, but only 80%. And Elder De says to Shaoxiang, how about you, teacher? And Shaoxiang says, like the well looking at the donkey. And then in the Chinese text, under the characters for the main story, there's these sometimes lovely little comments. So under the statement, like a donkey looking into the well, there is the statement, there is the poem, actually, a verse. The flowers consciously fall into the flowing stream. And under the line, it's like the well looking at the donkey. The verse is, the flowing stream, with no thought, carries the flowering, the fallen flowers, the well, the Dharma body of Buddha is something that donkeys can look at, which fools can look at, which idiots can look at, which we can look at. And when we look, when we contemplate this true body of Buddha, this Dharmakaya Vairochana Buddha, there's a response. Looking is an offering. Look, when we look as an offering, I'm looking at Vairochana Buddha as an offering to Vairochana Buddha. I'm looking at Vairochana Buddha. I don't know where it is, but I'm looking as an act of praise of this reality body. I'm looking at Vairochana Buddha as a way to pay homage to Vairochana Buddha. And this vast space is looking at me. The well is looking at me while I look at the well. Some commentator on this story said that what Elder D said was very good. It really is very good. That's a very important part of this teaching, is that this vast space, which is full of Dharma eyes and great compassion, it responds. And the way it responds is like when a donkey looks in a well, it responds. And they say that's a very good statement. And they said Cao Zhan dared to make another one. So he took the statement, donkey looking into well, and he turned it. A traditional Zen practice is to pivot. He turned it from donkey looks in well to well looks a donkey. And in that turning, that's the suchness, that turning from looking at the Buddha to the Buddha looking at us, constantly turning. Buddha looking at us looking at Buddha. Buddha and us. Buddha and ordinary donkeys. Intimately communicating. This is the teaching of thus. This is the teaching that we've been hearing from the sutra and also hearing from the Zen collection. From the first case to the last, we have this communication being brought up for our contemplation. Yeah, I borrowed this weekend book. And our Cao Zhan's teacher, Deng Shan, wrote this, unspeakably wonderful song. Do you know the name of the song?
Samadhi.
Jiumir Samadhi, yeah. He wrote this song about the samadhi. What samadhi? Precious Miri Samadhi, Jiumir Samadhi. The samadhi which he entered when he met his teacher. So he sat in front of his teacher and entered the samadhi. And then afterwards, he wrote this wonderful song about this samadhi, which you've heard and chanted. The teaching of thusness, intimately transmitted, Buddha ancestors. Now you have it, so please take care of it. Then it says, filling a silver bowl with snow, hiding a heron in the moonlight. It doesn't say like that or just like that, but it's kind of like filling a silver bowl with snow. What's like that? What's like filling a silver bowl with snow? Any guesses?
Thusness. Thusness.
Yeah, thusness. The thusness and also the teaching, the Dharma of thusness, the truth of thusness is like a silver bowl full of snow. It's like a like a heron in the moonlight. Did you see the herons in the moonlight last night? There were herons in the moonlight, and also there were scorpions in the lamp in the Doksan room, which you may have noticed bit you. Did you notice? You didn't notice, you donkeys? filling a bowl with snow or a bowl filled with snow. It's like that. And then it says, taken as similar, silver, a bowl. You could take them as similar, right? They are kind of similar. They're both kind of silvery or whitey. That's one of the nicknames for the teaching of thusness, if you're waiting. They're both kind of white. And if you take them, and you can take them as similar, but they're not the same. Another way is when you array, another translation is when you lay them out next to each other for comparison, they're not the same. What's the snow? What's the silver vault? Well, I don't know which is which. But maybe the silver bowl is the true body of Buddha. And maybe the snow is all sentient beings. All sentient beings are filling the bowl of the Dharma body of Buddha. All sentient beings are similar to Buddha. They're similar. Because if the Buddhas are all around and the sentient beings and the sentient beings are all around the Buddhas, they're similar. But they're not the same. And then it says, when you mix them, like if you mix the Buddha with the sentient being, when you mix them, you know where they are. So even though they're in this intimate relationship, you still know what vast space full of compassion is and what a donkey is. And don't get rid of the donkey. And by the way, we also have another expression in which the horse arrives before the donkey leaves. And the horse of the Dhammakaya Buddha arrives before the donkey leaves. We don't get rid of the donkey and then bring in the Buddha. Got a donkey? Yeah. Got a donkey. Where's the Buddha? The Buddha's arriving. Here comes the Buddha. And we don't, the Buddha comes while the horse is still here, fortunately. So here, our ancestor in Dongshan is telling us about this relationship that the inquirer, the one who sits in the presence of Buddha and says, I'm here to be of service. If you want me to come into your house, let me know. I'll come in and help you out if you want me to. And the house of the Buddha, that's their relationship. Thank you. And it's intimate. Another possibility for the silver bowl is vast emptiness. And the snow is all phenomena. All phenomena fit perfectly in an abundant way. Not quite overflowing, but full. All phenomena fit in the silver bowl of emptiness. And emptiness and phenomena, I'm not saying they're similar, but even if you see some similarity, they're not the same. And also, they're not different. The Heart Sutra says, they're not different. They're not different. Form is not different from emptiness. Color is not different from emptiness. Pain is not different from emptiness. What liberates pain is not different from pain. What liberates pain is not different from pain. It's right there. Right with the pain, right with the suffering, is the liberation of the suffering and the liberator, the illuminator. And suffering beings and Vairochana are intimate. And they are not different. They're intimate and not different. And they're not the same. The Heart Sutra doesn't say that. It could. Could write a new sutra. Just add in. And they're not the same. They're not different. What's not different? Form and emptiness are not different. And the same is true of feelings. Feelings are not different. Formations, perceptions, consciousness, all phenomena are not different from emptiness. And also all phenomena are not the same as emptiness. And also says, form is emptiness, emptiness is form, but that is, and it is true, is, emptiness is really form, and form really is emptiness. Emptiness is existence, and existence really is. But that really is not the same. They're not the same. They are unique and intimate. And this intimacy is the teaching of thusness. The silver bowl can also be seen as ultimate truth, emptiness, and conventional truth, five skandhas, all phenomena. They're also another duality. emptiness denies the emptiness denies that duality. Emptiness says conventional truth and ultimate truth says, ultimate truth doesn't say exactly, ultimate truth denies that ultimate truth is different from conventional truth. And this sutra and this poem say, and they're not the same. That additional thing says they have a relationship. So the Heart Sutra and emptiness are denying the dualities. They don't exist, really. It's saying not different, yes. But it has some little bit of drawback there that it maybe needs help. And so this sutra comes along and says, yes, yes, all these dualities do not exist. And also, these dualities are closely communicating. And in this communication, the ultimate, the vast space of the Buddha body can manifest. And that's what this story is about. It manifests in response to beings. And the first verse, which you probably just about memorized, the body of Buddha pervades, extends throughout all the great assemblies. It contains all the great assemblies. It fills the Dharma realm, the realm of truth, without end. It is quiescent, has no nature, and is ungraspable. And it appears, it manifests. This space can manifest. But it doesn't manifest of its own will. It manifests when it's stimulated. And we are stimulators. We're stimulating this vastness no matter what we do. But if we don't accept responsibility for our stimulating activity, we miss it, which is suffering. Accepting our stimulation fully, we realize that our stimulation is in this response. And there, in that relationship, the Buddha body manifests. In the first chapter of the Avatamsaka Sutra, in the first chapter of the great extensive Buddha flower splendor scripture, Maha Vaipulya Buddha Avatamsaka Sutra. In the first chapter, there's this Buddha sitting quietly. Just like in the first case of the Book of Serenity, Buddha sitting quietly, immovably, in this virtually infinite assembly. And not only is it infinite in number, it's infinite in diversity. And since whenever the sutra was written, maybe 2,000 years ago, more diversities have appeared that are not mentioned in that chapter. But that chapter does mention 40 categories of beings, and each category many. So this vast diversity in the assembly of Vairochana Buddha. Vast assembly. And anything you can think of is in that assembly. But the sutra, which is 100 pages long, only mentioned 40 categories. And for each category, by the power of the Buddha, the people around the Buddha tell us about the Buddha. And the first thing they tell us is the first verse, which I just recited. And they tell us many other verses. That's the first chapter. The Buddha is present. The assembly is present. And in that presence, they tell us about this great awakening. And again, they don't so much talk about Buddha's mind. In that first chapter, that keeps talking about Buddha's body. Then at the end of chapter one, this immense assembly, this oceanic assembly, makes clouds of offerings. From the ocean assembly come these huge, massive clouds of offerings. The ocean, the clouds come up, and then the clouds start raining down the offerings. So the offerings come from this wide assembly rise up in clouds and then rain down on the whole assembly, including the Buddha. That's the end of the first book. Then in this, this generosity weather, in this generosity climate, almost infinite generosity being generated and rained upon the assembly then, the Bodhisattvas assembly, maybe more than the Bodhisattvas, but at least the Bodhisattvas, start in unison having questions about this Buddha. And they also have, in unison, have a wish that the Buddha will respond to their questions about the Buddha. They're not speaking yet. But then after they have these thoughts, these thoughts get transformed into lights which turn out to speak. And the Buddha can hear what these beings are thinking through their offerings. So the offerings bring the Buddha's teaching, but the Buddha still doesn't talk. The Buddha gives light. And in the light are all kinds of voices. So here again, in chapter 2, the great assembly makes offerings, offers all kinds of offerings, and thinks of all kinds of questions, and the Buddha then responds with light. And the light is full of Dharma. So here again, the inquiry, the stimulus, and the response. And over in the descriptions of Buddha, in the questions of the assembly, over and over it's said, the Buddha cannot be grasped, the Buddha body is infinite, and it manifests in response to the inclinations and the mentalities of beings. It appears in accord with that. It appears differently to different people, and it appears differently according to their needs. Over and over, the sutra says that. And then our Zen school collection of stories says the same thing and discusses this relationship in which the body is manifested in our world. And every day in this retreat, we have been contemplating the unique breeze of reality. And what we've been doing through the day and through the night is incorporating the patterns of spring in Texas into the ancient brocade. And this morning also, taking new, fresh patterns of spring and incorporating into the ancient brocade, weaving our springtime experience with the upright, ungraspable, all-pervading Buddha body. The ancient brocade is this weaving of the donkey's activity with the vast body of Buddha. And also the various stories or cases in the Book of Serenity, they're also following the verse of the first case. Each case weaves another pattern into this brocade, another set of words and images that are integrated with this vast, ungraspable Buddha body. So although it can't be grasped, it can be woven into, we can weave into space, just like the galaxies are woven into space. The ungraspable space can hold virtually infinite galaxies. As one physicist said, it's a vast lacework of coherencies in space. And one more thing that just popped up was when celebrating this story of Saosheng and Elder D, the person who chose that case, chose that story, then writes a verse on it. Like he did for all the cases, he writes a verse. And how does the verse start? It starts with, the donkey looks into the well. The well, that's the first line. The second line is, the well looks at the donkey. And the well also could look into the donkey. So that's a pretty easy line to write. Just copy the first two lines of the case. So you could write verse commentaries on these cases. Just copy the first couple of sentences. And you're just like the great Zen master poet. And then there's also, in this Book of Serenity and in Blue Cliff Record, there's this wonderful story about also the same teaching about the sutra. It's called Sun Face Buddha, Moon Face Buddha, which the ancestors, they just love this story, Sun Face Buddha, Moon Face Buddha. And then the poet of the Blue Cliff Record, in his poem, he starts his poem with Sun Face Buddha, Moon Face Buddha. And then Hongjir starts his poem, Sun Face Buddha, Moon Face Buddha. This is like training wheels for us to learn how to write verse commentaries on the Zen koans. We can do that. Yes. Do you have a thread to offer to the brocade?
I have a question.
Is it an offering?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Does the 80% have any particular significance? Because there is this thing in business management, the 80-20 rule.
I would say that the 80% has unlimited significance. And we just brought up another one. Another significant it has is this, it's in a number of stories, the teacher says 80%. Like there's another one in this book called Great Compassion, Avalokiteshvara's Great Compassion. So there's an 80% in that one too. It's kind of traditional when you think somebody said something really great and you're ready to turn it. Not put it down, but just kind of seal it with your offering. They say 80%. But that doesn't make more than 100%, that additional thing, or less than 80%. It's just interacting with it. I think the main, for me today, the main, well, there's more than one main. So that one of the important, you could say the most important point is 80% means turn it. But another important thing is it's questionable. 80% is questionable. And what's being commented on is questionable. And if it's questionable, it's turnable. And if it's turnable, it's intimacy. Yes. He got showed like this. In San Francisco, we have a great basketball player who does this at the end of games sometimes, which is, I'm now putting the other team to sleep. Good night. He goes like this. And Zach just did that. Then he went,
When you say it's intimacy, and I see your gesture here, it looks to me like that might be almost a freeze frame, because is it in reality, is it really dynamic?
It's dynamic. Mm-hmm. It's dynamic. It's just, here it is, and now turn it. It's not here it is, and it doesn't stay that way. The snow and silver bowl doesn't stay that way. It's just for the moment, and now turn it. And he does turn it. He says, snow and silver bowl. Then he says, heron and moonlight. Then he says, take care of it. Or she said, take care of it before that. Take care of this dynamic intimacy. Intimacy, by definition, has to take care of intimacy. This is a living intimacy, not a frozen intimacy, even though snow is kind of cold. Yes.
I'm saying that the first verse was the Buddha's wisdom pervades the trees.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that the same thing that the Tao Te Ching?
Is the
Buddha in the grace that
yes.
fits the Tao Te Ching?
So, the Buddha pervades all great assemblies, throughout all the great assemblies, and then?
It's like a pendant, the Tao Te Ching, or the well and the Tao Te Ching, at each other, and nowhere. And brought to mind also the verse, a spiritual source shares their light, the branches here who follow the doubt.
Yeah. There's a pivot there too. You have the spiritual source, which is dark. In the spiritual source, you can't see anything. There's no, and you can't find any differences. But that dark spiritual source is shiny. It's a darkness which shines, and it shines in the light where you can make discriminations. So non-discriminating wisdom is in the light of discriminating consciousness. And also, the discriminating consciousness, the light, the branching streams, they flow in this non-duality. The mind discriminates and makes differences is flowing in the darkness of no discrimination and no difference.
So you make the right connection there,
you spoke about this stream bearing the fallen petals. Could you speak a little bit more about the intimacy relationship and its relationship to our own mortality?
Every moment I'm looking into the well, and every moment drops away. Every moment I am a flower and I fall. And I fall into, or I looked into, what carries me into the next moment. So my mortality is my offering to the stream which carries me moment by moment. And in it's my offering to that intimate relationship to what carries my moment by moment birth and death. And it is that carrying, that intimacy, is nirvana. But also, that nirvana is not separate from my birth and death. So, that teaching of thusness, that intimacy of my freedom and my bondage, my peace and my suffering, that's my responsibility to receive, remember, practice, and transmit. By my death and birth and death, I use this as offerings. My illness, I use as an offering to this process of intimacy. That's a little more. Yes.
Why do the donkey leave her spirits and can stay and hang out?
Why does the donkey leave? The donkey doesn't have to leave. Once the horse arrives, we're fine. now the story is complete. Got the horse and the donkey. Donkey doesn't have to leave, but some people do want the donkey to leave. So and that's a donkey. Donkeys want to leave, and they want to come. So, but before the donkey leaves, it's not like the horse comes and then the donkey leaves. Before the donkey leaves, while the donkey is still here, the horse arrives, and it's good if the donkey invites the horse. The horse is going to come anyway, but nice for the donkey to realize, oh, why invited you? You can be here. And also, at the end of the precious mirror samadhi, makes this interesting statement. Have you noticed the end of it, what it says? What does it say at the end of this precious mirror samadhi song? Pardon?
Like a horse that's shame snow, right?
Well, that's close to the end, but what's the very end? Yeah, that's the end, but I'm sorry, it's not the end. Just before what Drew said, it says, practice secretly working within, like a fool, like an idiot, like a donkey. That's how to practice like them. Because before they leave, before the fool leaves, the teaching of thusness arrives. So don't try to get rid of the fools and idiots. And also, it says practice secretly, you know, don't tell people that you're trying to be a fool. Just accept that you are. Well, how do I say? I'm not to tell people. That may be disturbing. Like, and they might think, well, are you telling me something? If you do think anybody's a fool, it's a good idea to tell them that you're thinking maybe you are. Yes.
Well, the other line that goes with that is, just to continue in this way is called the host within the host.
Yeah.
Is that like the snow and the silver bowl?
No, it's like the silver bowl and the silver bowl. It's the silver bowl of the silver bowl. So the host is the Dharmakaya Buddha. So this is the host within the host is to be completely the guest, a donkey. So the horse within the horse is to be wholeheartedly a donkey, nonstop. So it says if you can achieve continuity, so it's hard to every moment remember that you're a dying donkey. Once in a while is good. If you can achieve continuity, that's like you're getting to realize that the Dharmakaya within the Dharmakaya is the donkey. It's even more of the Dharmakaya than the Dharmakaya. Yes.
Well, on Tuesday we were geese, and today we're donkey.
And idiots. And fools. Anybody got, it's like there's nobody who is equal or not. We include everybody. You know, any some people like you don't want to include? This is including, this sutra is each of us includes everybody. Walt Whitman, right? I am among the multitudes. He's got a sutra coming out of that. So with this teaching, we can really be authentically in a lame way, be in a stupid way, be humble. Can't even be like really smart humble. That's so. So I'm happy to celebrate that end practice of like being like a fool, which is not doing anything extra. I'm already got that down. But I'm now saying to accept responsibility for being a fool and being an idiot. Being a fool, like being fooled. We are fooled by stuff all the time. These images appear and we're fooled by them. We think, oh, that's a beautiful person. Okay, yeah, fine. We believe that, then that's a delusion. And we are susceptible to believing that. So, and I want to admit it because then we realize what we're built to realize, the teaching of thusness. But if we try to skip over being a fool and want to be at least like average, at least. Yes.
Yesterday you talked about it's like a massive fire.
Yes.
Turning away and touching.
Yes.
We're both wrong. I feel like turning away again, I have an idea of this, like maybe being completely lost in thought or just forgetting completely about the Dharma. Well, what about, could you talk about what is touching and how that goes?
Well, like grasping something really good. Like, hey, I'm here today and there's thoughts, but I'm not lost in them. I'm like just present and calm and full of love. And the thoughts are coming and going, but they're not bothering me. And other people's thoughts are not bothering me. And I'm opening to all suffering beings. I'm not putting myself above them. And I'm not grasping what compassion is. And I got that. That's touching. This is what I've got. But although it's wrong to touch, I'm a fool, so I'm probably going to. Mm-hmm. And I can notice when I touch. It's not like this, I have to wait a long time to find out my foolishness. There's lots of opportunities throughout the day, little nuggets of realizing that I'm trying to touch this teaching, this wonderful teaching. I'm trying to touch Buddhas and ancestors. I'm trying to touch the intimate transmission of the Buddha way. I want to take care of the intimate transmission. I want to enter the samadhi. And there's probably something off about how I want to do that. And right now I don't see it. Well, now I do. And I don't stay there all day. I just say, oh, that's off. I see it and I'm kind of embarrassed. So again, when you practice in this way, it isn't like you notice that you're a donkey and you go get all upset about it. It says, oh, the donkey again. Hi. The more you do this, the more it kind of like, it still hurts to be a donkey. Donkeys have problems. But it's not it doesn't knock you off your seat. You just go, oh, there it is again, grasping, putting myself above, separating myself from the geese. There it is. Silly boy, silly girl, silly non-gender, silly infinite different forms. How's that? I'm looking. Yes.
You said the flower drops its petals, and you saw them, the body strange, that is the mind. Could you speak more about?
Would I say something more about what?
How to sleep and the mind.
I said mindlessly, but I changed the translation to without thought, because mindlessly sounds like laziness or something. But the vast spaciousness of the Dharmakaya is not like, you know, what we call lazy or distracted. It just doesn't have any thought. It includes all thoughts, but doesn't really have any one of them. So it's just, it looks at us, but it doesn't think, oh, I'm looking at you, or I'm not looking at you. It's just looking at you. All day long, the Buddha body is looking at you and me, but not necessarily thinking, oh, I'm the Buddha body, looking at all these beings, doing all this amazing benefit. It doesn't hold any idea. So it carries us without thinking, boy, I'm doing a great public service here. But it does carry the thought, I'm doing a great public service. It carries that thought, but it's not thinking, I do it. It's vast emptiness. It's denying any duality. So I think maybe without thought or is better than mindlessly. Mindlessly sounds a little too human. See, the humans can be mindful and mindless.
Conscious and unconscious.
Humans are conscious, except when we're not, and we're not under special circumstances. Humans are not conscious in the sense of, I'm here looking at you, and we're in a retreat together. Most of the time, that's the way it is. But in very deep, deep sleep, when there's no dream, or in certain special concentration practices, or when there's certain kinds of organic disease, there's cognition, there's mind, but it's not like, I'm here with you today in history. But it's a cognitive process for me to figure out how to talk right now, how to move my lips and tongue and teeth and jaw and move the breath. All that I cannot consciously figure out. I tried for a number of years, and then finally I was able to do it, but it wasn't my trying that made it happen. But my trying contributed to that which makes it possible to speak and make gestures. So we have a mind that's not conscious. And when our consciousness temporarily takes a pause, which it does sometimes, the unconscious cognitive processes us just as alive and beautiful and radiant and all those things as when we're conscious. Our consciousness doesn't kill that. It contributes to that, and it also, it's based on that. If you take away the unconscious process, there's no conscious process. But you can take away the conscious process and still have vast unconscious cognitive activity. And then there's another kind of mind, which is not a thought, which is this Vairochana Buddha mind. Buddha's wisdom reaches everywhere, but Buddha's wisdom is not human consciousness. And it's not the unconscious cognitive process of humans and non-humans. So in a way, there's three kinds of mind. Body-based cognitive process. Self-centered consciousness coming from the cognitive process. And wisdom, which understands and illuminates this whole process and liberates it. But it's not like those other two. And it's not like them. Well, it is kind of like them, but it's not the same and it's not different. But it's united. Whereas consciousness sometimes thinks it's not united with some other consciousness. It's like, I'm not intimate with that consciousness. Mm-hmm. With those consciousnesses, I'm not intimate with them. Yeah, well, then I confess that. I'm sorry. I sometimes said, no, I wouldn't do that. And since I wouldn't do that, I don't include that person in me. And I'm not included and these things I wouldn't do. And that thought includes all beings. It's an illusion, which we have. Have you noticed it? And all those thoughts are flower petals falling into the stream of... I see some people looking at their watch, so maybe I should stop. Or maybe we should stop. Maybe that's enough weaving for today. I had the thought yesterday came to my consciousness... Kind of wish we had about 50 more days to go through the Book of Serenity. I think I wasn't thinking the Avatamsaka. I don't think we can get through in 50 days, but we could do the the 100 cases, I think we could 2 cases a day of the Book of Serenity. So in 50 days, we could enjoy that. I had that thought. But as you know, we're not planning on having 50 more days.
Absolutely.
It's kind of I was happy I had the thought, but it was a little bit sad that we have to go before we get all these teachings from that Book of Serenity. So I pray for our continued good health, and help by health I mean continued key interest in studying the teachings, key interest in seeing this Buddha body, Puri. I pray we continue to have the health benefit.